You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
That's a strange energy for a Monday.
We had a three-day weekend, Derek. I feel great.
Yes, but then we all have to return to work.
We do.
Not that we're here to muddle it down for you anyway. I just like the heavy music, the good morning. Yep. Like, brother, good for you.
Three-day weekend, got to relax a lot. Was in Toronto yesterday, saw the Halos lose. We don't have to worry about that.
Let's go Jays!
Great weekend.
Your AL East leading Toronto Blue Jays.
Winners of eight straight Toronto Blue Jays.
Buffalo baseball, baby.
I'll tell you right now, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Blue Jays are a fun watch, man. They really are.
They righted the ship from an early season slump. It's a shame that we're not even halfway through the season, or we are relatively close to the halfway point, but
that's fine.
They're playing their best baseball right now. I would like it to just continue, please.
You know what I see with this, though? And to be fair, I went into this, obviously, as a Halos fan. Me and my brother were talking about this a lot yesterday. I want to attend a game as a Jays fan. I don't hate the Jays. I would happily go there and watch them play like Cleveland or anybody else in the AL West.
They're also downright dominant at home, though.
They are very, very good at home. The Rogers Center was packed yesterday. I mean, legitimately, it was a great crowd for a Sunday afternoon game. The end of a series, it was packed in there. It was beautiful. Thank goodness the dome wasn't open. Having walked much of that city in 88 degree weather, if that dome was open, we would have been in for a long afternoon. It was not, which was good.
Only the Mets have a better win percentage at home right now.
But man, they're a good watch. And I'll tell you this, I went as a Halos fan with the assumption that they lost. Okay, you're going to be sellers at the deadline. If you're a Blue Jays fan, I don't know their prospect pool in terms of how great they are graded wise. I know all of them play for the Bisons. I don't know necessarily how well they are graded. But this was something the last time I went to Toronto that was exciting was that the Angels were buyers in the deadline trying to make a playoff push. But that's all. It was a playoff push. It wasn't for a division title or anything like that. Toronto fans, you got to be having that feeling and that excitement that comes around of we're going to be buyers at the deadline. We're going to do something to push now for an AL East title, let alone just a playoff spot. Because the Yankees continue to play poorly. They won yesterday against the Mets, although late the Mets had a real chance there to take that game again and sweep them as well. But being in Toronto, it's such a nice sports city as well, at least for baseball from what I've seen. I imagine hockey might be a little more aggressive. But there was some jeering and stuff like that, because I'm fairly certain the two people I went with, we were the only Angels fans. I'm almost certain of that. Definitely in our section. And it was good camaraderie. It was fun. The crowd was awesome. The city's beautiful. I love going to Toronto. Now it's every few years. I end up making a weekend trip out of it with my family or even just the day trip. The food scene's incredible. And the weather the two times we've gone has been great. And it's just that is something, if you haven't done, you want to go see a major league ball game. If you've been to Pittsburgh, Cleveland too, I absolutely recommend going to Toronto. The drive, by the way, Derek. I know we all know you get on the QEW and just go.
Yeah.
It never feels as long as it actually is, quote unquote, is. I think from my house, it's about a two-hour drive. But from the border, it's technically an hour and a half. It never feels like that, even once. It felt like such a quick drive outside of getting out, dealing with, post-game traffic. It was great. I absolutely loved it. If you haven't gone, I cannot recommend it enough. And it helps, too. The Jays are a great watch now. You can't even look at their run differential and give them heat for it. They're plus 11 now. Derek's mentioned outside of the Mets, plus 12 now. Outside of the Mets, they have the best home winning percentage in baseball.
And it's tied with the Dodgers.
And their lineup, Derek, yesterday, and I like this now. At least from the games I've seen, they don't show batting averages really anymore. As the highlighted thing, you can find it when a batter comes up. But they'll show the whole lineup's OPS, because that's really all of your hitting statistics put into one. That lineup, they're just playing on a different level right now. I was so prepared for most of that game to see George Springer hit a two-run home run, hit a three-run home run, the way he's been on. Guerrero hit a monster double early in the game. I got to see Trout home run. That made all of it worth it. I'll be completely honest. The first time I went, he was hurt. I got to see Ohtani hit a monster double. So I got to see the guys do their things, and that was cool. But can't recommend it enough. I've loved the sports in the summer so far. The NBA and the NHL was super interesting really up until the end, NBA especially. And then you've got the golf has been really good and the baseball has been really good. You know, even if you're not a Yankees fan, they've been interesting, whether it's been positive or negative, they've been interesting. You know, to start the year, they're scoring historic pace kind of run numbers. I mean, we've talked to Sal Marano a few times, especially you look at the Aaron Judge numbers that were going on
right,
there.
Especially early on in the year.
And how ridiculous that was. And now here locally, you know, I don't necessarily know how much Buffalo makes up Toronto Blue Jays fans. I know the last two days, Mike Schoep's been here alone. We've taken calls of like how you got there. It's been a lot of Cincinnati Reds fans. Surprisingly, that's really been the team that's run
the Jays
away with
don't
it.
Have as huge of a following, despite the fact that Buffalo is the minor league affiliate. They did stray away for a little bit and then got back to Toronto, but they've served a couple of teams.
The Mets, so, I know, is one of them.
The Mets is one of them, the Pirates, Cleveland.
Pirates is a weird one.
I know, but it happened.
I can get to the other three. The Pirates just make zero sense.
I mean, it was also a decent amount of time ago. But so you can see a lot of origins going from there as well. You know, it's also the one team that requires you to have a passport to go watch.
That's right.
So that might, you know, turn some people off, for example. If I'm going to make that drive, why not just go right down the 90 to Cleveland or, you know, the Yankees are on television, and so there is a bit of a convenience factor, despite the fact that Toronto's, in terms of mileage, the closest.
Yep.
But I don't know how I gravitated here. Like, as a kid, I just liked the color scheme.
Fair. It's a good color scheme.
I also, as a kid, liked the number 49, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know. We've all got our red flags. It's okay.
Hey, high 40 numbers are good numbers. 47. Everyone out there knows what I'm talking about. Christian Benford knows what's up.
Yeah. John Lynch made that number great.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I can't really say the same about 49. Like, why as a kid did I pick that one?
See, the thing with Benford is, you know, it's deliberate. It wasn't just that he was a sixth-round rookie corner. It was he wore a number in the 40s at Villanova, too. He's doing that deliberately.
And that's why it's great.
Which is a red flag. But not in the bad connotation. There's a screw loose there, but we like that in our football players. You like
there's
that in your athletes.
Screw loose there.
Because a corner who plays as good as he is,
you and this
should be like, Patrick Surtain, I'm going to wear two. I'm going to wear a number in the 20s. He's like, nah, 40s. All right.
You
better be good.
You and your war on numbers is always going to be fascinating to me.
And it'll never go away. But yeah, it was a great time. Absolutely loved it. If you haven't made the trip, I cannot recommend it enough. I will say, though, I did not have a lot of signal yesterday, so I was catching up on the Bo Byram news very much an hour or two later than
everyone else was. Oh, so we're doing
this right now? We can do it real quick if you want to.
I guess we're doing this right now.
Him and, Connor Timmins, they're both going to arbitration.
One was player filed, the other was team filed, so there is differences. Let that be known. Team filed allows for the player to pick the term on contract in terms of arbitration filings, which could mean that the Sabres are either going to walk themselves into UFA with Bo Byram in 2 years, or Byram picks a 1 year and we either do this all over again or it facilitates a trade and he's up for renegotiation with another club.
So if he picks the 1 year, he doesn't walk straight to UFA, it has to be the 2 year then?
I think that's the case.
Okay.
Unless because it's player designated, that might be like the, oh my God, this might be the Ottawa Senators Mark Stone fumble.
Sweet.
I don't know for sure, so I'm not going to put myself into a spiral here. The one positive I can gain out of this, it puts a clock on talks.
Yes, Byram does need to play two more seasons before he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yes. So, but also we've seen awkward dealings before with that, most notably with Mark Stone in Ottawa. So I'm not going to guarantee that that's the situation, but because of how the Sabres have been run over the last 14 years, that fear is not gone away. However, this puts a clock on negotiations. That's the one positive of this. Whether it be a trade or you're going to play with Byram for this year or even the next 2 years, for example, it puts a clock on it. We're not going to be waiting until August to figure out what's going on with the situation. No, we're going to get a timeline here now. And either he ends up getting traded or, as I'm suspecting at this point, this is the roster for opening day.
Yeah, that's I know where you've been sitting at, is that this is probably what the team is going to look like.
This is what the team is probably going to look like.
Give or take a few prospects making the opening night.
And it's more about Kevin Adams staying firm on something, and I commend him for this, of not taking futures for Byram and thinking that this is the best I'm going to do right now is have Byram here next to Dahlin, because that's not a bad thing at all. Like, oh, he's a Dahlin merchant. Yeah, so what? He's playing next to Dahlin again. Do we want him to look better for a prospective trade next year? Maybe. That wouldn't be so bad. Or even to start the year, like I've been thinking about a Matt Duchene situation.
Yep.
There are worse fates than having him play again, play next to Rasmus Dahlin again. Like, come on. It doesn't have to be divide by zero kinds of logic here.
Right.
Put the guy next to Dahlin and he looks good. You know what scouts use? They're eyeballs. You know what he'll look like when he's playing next to Dahlin?
Yeah.
Really sharp. Because that's something Dahlin can do for a lot of players. And Byram is a quality skater on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, skater, I say. You know, like, obviously the analytics do say that he is a different player without him. Mm-hmm. But he skates and moves well. That should be enough to entice a team. At the beginning of the season, that's looking to get a little hot or take advantage of a hot start. That said, say the Sabres start strong, like they did this past year. They come back from Europe. They kind of steady themselves up. And in November, they're actually looking like a competent playoff threat. And then December happened.
Yes.
We don't talk about that. But if the Sabres get off to that kind of start and make a Byram trade, that won't sit well.
No.
But at that point, you're weaponizing, hey, we got off to a strong start. We're going to keep him so that we don't go into a tailspin. That's probably what you're doing at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I think, in terms of defense, yeah, there's a lot worse rosters you can have on opening night than the decor of a pairing of Dahlin and Byram, Power Kesselring, and Samuelson and Timmins.
Mm-hmm. When you do put it like that, it's like, okay, if the netminders are solid.
Ready? If that's your decor on opening night, you're going to find out hard and fast what UPL really is. Because if you can't get it done with a decor like this, either remove the entirety of the assistant coaching staff or you got to get rid of UPL.
Yeah.
Like, there's something wrong if defensively you are a bunch of sieves again.
Mm-hmm.
You have a team with Rasmus Dahlin. You should not be this bad defensively, especially when he has gotten far better in his own zone from where he was as a rookie.
Norris Trophy votes this year.
Sixth.
Yep.
The league has taken notice. Also, you look at zone entries against him. Those metrics were really good.
Mm-hmm. They were, absolutely.
But now you got to get the rest of the team going here, and that's why you get Kesselring. That's why you get Timmins. You try to create depth within your defensive pipeline, or not pipeline, but like in your defensive core, that it gets you to where you've got to be.
And the hope there now is that if Dahlin does get hurt, you won't lose 13 in a row, because the defense without him is a mess. And even with him is not great.
And that's also a claim for keeping Power or keeping Byram for these next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That is a claim. We're keeping him because there's a lot worse fates to have, say Dahlin goes out, than a Byram Power, not even necessarily tandem, but like you're splitting the duties.
Yeah.
You guys are going to be the ones carrying the group around right now while Dahlin's out. Heaven forbid. There we go. We're going to fix that right now. That's the case for keeping him. I don't know. Because, like, the Paterka thing, that happened all so fast. Byram, there's not been nearly as much noise about it other than, like, you know, we hear whispers that he doesn't want to be in Buffalo. But if that's the case, well, Kevin Adams has proven you don't want to be here. Get out, and I'm going to force it out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get out of here. We're going to find the best package we can, and that's it. I don't know if that's happening here. as much as the noise or like the rumors or anything like that mm-hmm. have been going around. Because there's not even as many legitimate insider reports on these things. Just reports that there might be a trade happening.
Yeah.
Again, Paterka, outside of Saravalli, nobody really had that until it showed up suddenly and extremely. And that's where I feel like that Elliot Friedman, like 30 for 30 thing.
Yeah.
It's about what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the Sabres still never wished J.J. Paterka well.
Yeah, that's not. Well, actually, I'm kind of excited to see when Utah comes to Buffalo for the first time
yeah,
this year.
Like,
that's actually more
But also, we're never going to get that real answer. You know that. You ask a hockey player about that, very rarely are you going to get the real story.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get hockey player talk.
Ooh,
so,
boy.
Yeah.
So exciting.
We're going to get the, you know, we thought we had a chance to go to a different situation and, you know, something mm-hmm. like that mm-hmm. along those lines. With that many us. Byram, I don't see as much of that. So, credence to wherever they are right now, but I'm really leaning toward the feeling. This is nothing I have on information other than my gut feeling that this is what they're going to settle on. Because the offers aren't good enough, he's going to take his ball and go home. And this is the roster day one. Question is it good enough?
Well, that, and I've seen a lot of people go, is it 15 points better? Because that would have been the playoffs.
I would dismiss 15 points because when you go into a tailspin like that.
Yeah, right. You've mentioned the 13-game losing streak. That's not, it shouldn't happen again.
It's not that it's not something that should be replicable.
Mm-hmm.
It sinks you. You were playing in last place for 4 months.
Yeah.
That's dreadful. But also, you managed to not be the team in last place at the end of the year. Which tells you you were actually better than that.
Mm-hmm.
You were better than the 13-game losing streak. It is something that's criminal that should not be happening.
Yeah.
And it's a team collapsing upon itself. Not having Darlene for half of it sure doesn't help.
Right.
But once you start losing more games like that, it really starts to affect you. If you pick up even 3 wins out of that, it's still a double-digit losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
It's just almost like incomprehensible how that happens, let alone to a team twice in 5 years. But that's neither here nor there. They're not 15 points lesser of a playoff team. But they're also still not a playoff team. And I'm looking at Columbus and what they're building, and I'm thinking, they've passed you. I look at what Montreal has done and then decided, we're not sitting on these laurels. We know that we need to get better as a roster, and they're adding. Ottawa, going to stay the course on this one. I think Ottawa might be the team to drop off a little bit.
Okay.
They're very volatile.
Mm-hmm.
But are you going to be the team? There's no way the Rangers are going to be that bad again. Not with Shesterkin in net. Can the Islanders have a fast retool? They have Ilya Sorokin.
Mm-hmm.
So you have quality goaltending. Can they inject enough youth in there to be a problem again? Pittsburgh, dead. Boston, super dead.
Mm-hmm.
And making more baffling decisions than even what I can think about with the Sabres. It's tough to look at this team and go, where can you take advantage of a hole in the armor to infiltrate the postseason? You have to be better than Ottawa, Montreal, Columbus, and probably both New York teams. Pittsburgh, I think, is toast. Boston, Philly, also toast. Even Philly's trying to change some things around, though. Detroit, I don't know whatever to make of Detroit. Like, yeah, the Red Wings.
That's your plan. Let's go.
The Red Wings had 86 points, but they never moved the needle for me
mm-hmm.
as a team that is going to be just hanging around but not good enough to make it. And Eiserman's on year seven.
Yep.
But you have so many teams. Like, I'm thinking of three that are dead in the water. And much like how the Sabres in these losing streaks that have happened over the last 3 years, can you overcome all of them in the standings? Are you going to get past that many teams in front of you? Because Toronto's not going away. Tampa's not going away. Florida's definitely not going away. The Metro, you'd think Washington and Carolina and New Jersey are all pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
They have young cores that can really keep things going. And now Washington also gets to play without the pressure of a goals record for Ovechkin.
Yeah, now it just kind of becomes play.
Now it's just play hockey again.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think Washington's a team to drop off, are they worse than top three in the Metro?
Well, no, because we've talked a lot. The Metro is specifically not very good.
Not very good.
Even in the top end.
But even say Washington drops off a little bit. Are they enough to be a playoff seed holder, mm-hmm. automatic qualifier? Or are they now a wild card team that you also have to fight against?
Mm-hmm.
Because in the Metro, when one leaves, another has to take its place.
Yeah.
Of those teams that I mentioned, the New York teams, or Columbus, excuse me. Like, one of those takes that place. And Washington's now in the thick of the same thing that you're fighting for,
yes.
which is two playoff spots. You are not fighting for the division. You are not fighting for an automatic three. You are fighting for one of the two wild cards. Because the Atlantic, as we've mentioned, is stacked. Toronto is not going anywhere. Yeah, they lost Mitch Marner.
They'll probably not be a cup favorite, but they're probably still going to be a playoff team.
They're probably not getting 108 points again. But they'll settle within, say there's a 10-point drop-off without Marner. Okay?
We're still in the 90s.
Yeah, you're still in the 90s, still very comfortably hanging around a playoff spot.
Yeah.
A 10-point drop-off gets you to 98. And I think that Toronto's a good enough regular season team that I don't think they're worrying about that. Marner had a lot to do with their regular season success, but they still have Matthews. They still have Nylander. They still have Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
They still have Morgan Riley. They still have a good team.
They signed Matthew Nyes to
Matthew Nyes is extended.
They're expecting
Nicolas
him to take
Waugh
next.
Probably fits in perfectly as a middle six forward for them.
So, yeah, so they're not going anywhere. A lot of
Tampa's
the top teams
definitely
aren't.
Not going anywhere.
Yeah, a lot of the top teams aren't going.
Florida, annoyingly so. Hey, we're going to retain all three of these guys. Thanks for killing all the fun, Panthers.
Keep going. Keep winning.
Gross. So who are the Sabres surpassing?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, with this roster that has a massive hole in its top six, and you're banking on either Jack Quinn or Isaac Rosén to fill that void. Are you just hoping to make the playoffs bass-ackwards?
Pretty much. 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to talk to Sabres, the Bo Byram arbitration situation, do you even expect a trade to come? Or is this, like with Derek, the roster that we are likely to see opening night? Also, want to touch on the Bills, and I tweeted this out a little while ago, and this will sort of be the topic of today. ESPN has James Cook in their top 10 running back list. He comes in at number 8. That was done by Jeremy Fowler. And so the question of the day is, who on the Bills do you think will earn top 10 honors this time next year? I have a player on the defense. I think they absolutely could be that player. I want to talk about that coming up after a quick timeout. We'll take your calls at 803-0550. This is WGR.
It's a pitch play to Cook. Dives, reaches for the end zone, and he's got it! He is in for the touchdown! What an amazing effort by Cook, who is back in the kitchen!
Chris Brown there on the call. Bills running back James Cook, one of his 16 rushing touchdowns from last year. Very much a breakout year for what is now going to be the fourth year running back. It's his second 1,000-yard season in a row. He did so in just 207 attempts. However, as you've probably heard many of us on the station talk about, that can be both a positive and a negative. His usage is not super high, but for our purposes today, we are talking James Cook and really the Bills as a whole. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN has begun his top 10 list for positions. It's league intel from 70-plus executive coaches and scouts. It's up at his Twitter. It's free to read. And for James Cook, he does come in top 10 for running backs. He's right at the bottom of the list at number 8 overall. I actually do think that is a good spot for Cook. I think that's about right. Last year, he was an honorable mention. This year, he comes in at number 8. I think that's about right. He had a very explosive year. Great fantasy player, again, with all the touchdowns. But there's some room for him to grow. And even in the kind of the piece they have about him, I know Joe brought this up too. An NFL executive, an AFC executive, said he's perfect for the offense. Quarterback that spreads the thing around. He's good in the passing game. Catches the ball really well. Good in open space. Not sure he's elite yet, but he's really, really good. And really, I think most of us do have this question. What will he do? What is he? If the touches go up, if all of a sudden he is asked to be a three-down back touching the rock 20, 25 times a game, what does he then become? And we really don't know. We don't know for sure yet. And it's kind of something, if you can remember, C.J. Spiller from a number of years ago, a decade ago. He had his breakout season. I think it was like 1,200 yards rushing. His yards per carry was absurd, but his carries were low. He didn't have a ton. The next year he gets more, and it was like, oh. Maybe it was more of a flash in the pan kind of season.
Sometimes a player will be more effective when they are kept fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that Cook does at times deserve more touches, but it also does seem like the Bills can figure out pretty quickly who's got the hot hand on a certain day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Ray Davis has more of a say in the run game. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes there are days where he's getting absolutely stuffed last year, and you're feeding James Cook the rock, or you're giving more plays to Ty Johnson. The Bills have too much versatility on offense. Again, the offensive coordinator's mantra is everybody eats.
Mm-hmm.
That is not exempt from the backfield.
Yeah, his highest rushing totals last year was, in the regular season, at least 20. That was week 5 against Houston in a loss in which the passing game was effectively a net negative. It was a really bad day passing-wise. Ultimately, it's after the next week against the Jets, they make the trade for Amari Cooper. Everyone kind of knew they needed to do that. They didn't even have Khalil Shakir that day. His lowest rushing total, though, of the year was 6. It's going to be 6. That's the loss against the Rams. That ultimately is a day where
they have to
game,
throw to catch up.
Yeah, they're playing to catch up the whole thing. Now, with that being said, in the playoffs, he had 23 rushing attempts against Denver. That is ultimately the season high. It has been very much noted in the playoffs, though, against Kansas City. He only has 13 rushing attempts, 3 targets, 3 catches. He's not, though, used much on that last drive at all. I don't even think he is on the last drive.
Which was bafflingly so, because
he was their best player that day.
That
is inarguable. He had 2 touchdowns as well. I mentioned the 3 catches. 3 catches for 49 yards, good for a 16.3 average. He was their best player that day.
And one of those touchdowns was, as we have pointed out, potentially iconic.
Mm-hmm.
If that ends up being the final score of the game.
Or even just one of the scores that leads them to a win.
Yes, that's one where you don't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Slam dunks it in there on a 4th down. Effectively, your season is on the line. And James Cook helps with a stay of execution. I don't understand you hear some dismissive talk sometimes about James Cook just because he wants a new contract and he wants more money. Sometimes fans will look at it and go, well, what about the team? I get it. You're a fan of the Buffalo Bills. You're not a fan particularly, strictly of James Cook. James Cook is just on the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, understandable. I get it. Yep.
But you don't need to dismiss what he's done because he's looking for more money.
But it got a little contentious this offseason, I think, with Cook in particular.
That's what I'm saying.
There wasn't a
we
lot
don't
of,
need this.
But there wasn't a lot of communication, so all we had was the number.
But stay real,
and
people.
Then him retweeting some stuff, and that was about it. But, I do really look at kind of what his value would be, and I think NFL executive scouts, what have you, could be right in that we don't know with him, because the next guy up, the guy that finishes 7th in this list, is Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor ran the ball significantly more than James Cook did.
Right.
He had 303 rushing attempts to James Cook's 207, a whole 100 more. Now, he ultimately finished with about 1,400 yards, just a little over, and less touchdowns. But he stuck right about where Cook was in terms of average. He was 4.7 to Cook's 4.9. Cook also had 32 catches for 258 yards and two touchdowns, where Jonathan Taylor had 18 receptions for 136 yards and a touchdown. So he was used more in the rushing game flat out, where Cook, I guess, was a bit of a mix. But again, like, and that's the guy one place above him is touching the ball about 100 times more than he is in a season.
Right.
And so that's where I look at, I think number eight is a good spot. I think that's exactly right. But that's also where you, looking at this, just using this list, I think that's where you will see a lot of Bills fans get nervous at the idea of paying him $15 million a year.
Yes.
Even you know, upwards of that, because you look and go, he's not touching the ball nearly as much as the guys ahead of him. Taylor's just one spot ahead of him. You get to Saquon Barkley. You get to Derrick Henry. You get to, well, Ashton Jeanty will be this year with Pete Carroll as his head coach.
Bijan Robinson.
Bijan Robinson in Atlanta, who's, I think, very much forgotten because Atlanta has been a particularly good team. I think that could change this year.
Bijan got to 304 carries last year.
And he had over 1,400 yards.
And, ready?
What was
James Cook had 16 touchdowns, right?
Yeah.
There were seven running backs last year that had 14 or more. Robinson was one of them. Well, hang on. Six running backs, Jalen Hurts.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But
forgot he was very high up there.
Oh,
as well.
My God. It's ridiculous. But think about that. They had 27 rushing touchdowns between two players last year. Hilarious to me. But that's the thing. Like, ready? Then it's seven running backs with 13 or more rushing touchdowns. That's still very impressive within the league. Jahmyr Gibbs does not get the football nearly as much as I think he should.
Well, because they do have a thunder and lightning kind of aspect.
Still, but he still had 43 more carries.
Yeah.
And he averaged 5.6 yards per touch.
He was ranked third on this list as
insane,
well.
Insane. The kind of player that he is. So, again, it is tough to look at what Cook has been doing, though, and think you're going to give him that much more money. It's almost like as a team, you're probably looking at it as an overpayment. However, that said, it's not like James Cook is doing nothing.
No.
The man was fantastic springing big plays last year. At least on the Bills roster.
And he was one of their true consistent weapons. That was a big conversation for me where I didn't want this to go to a point where he was traded this offseason because I didn't know who else they had that could be a danger. I love Khalil Shakir, but I'm not going to sit here and say Khalil Shakir is a threat for touchdowns all the time. He is not Amon-Ra St. Brown, who plays the slot receiver position the same. He is much more, I think, a Cole Beasley potentially plus by the time of his prime of his career because of the yak ability, but he's not going to be that guy.
Of players that qualify, Cook was fifth in yards per carry.
Yeah.
There's a big play element to him.
So he is a weapon. And that's where I think it's absolutely right that he should be the top 10
over running back. So we cannot dismiss what he is. Yeah. We can't dismiss what he is. And that's perfectly fine. So you can like Ray Davis, for example, but it's not going to matter because they're not going to have him out carrying James Cook when he is one of the best in the league last year. At yards per touch.
Yeah. And so with that, looking at it this year, Cook ultimately did have a breakout season. He finishes around the same in rushing yards, but the touchdowns really popped off. He did become very much a known named player in the league. The Bills have got to start hoarding some of these guys, get more named players, what have you. I think they have a real shot at that. And so on that, I tweeted out, we're taking your calls 803-0550, the number to call. Who on the Bills do you think will earn those top 10 honors this time next year? And for me, I've mentioned Ed Oliver, I think, is a really, really good player that could potentially be elite. I think Christian Benford, Derek, when the cornerback list comes out, will actually already be on the list because he is very much an underrated guy, but scouts know who he is. And I think that also be a, I argue would say, I think it's an easy answer with potentially an improved secondary where the second cornerback might get more targets.
Right.
Or flat out, Benford may have, because it's an improved secondary, Benford may have more opportunities for the interceptions, which will always, that's the pop-off staff for corners. I think he'll prove that he might even be an arguably all-pro level corner. Definitely Pro Bowl. He is already there. But for me, the player I went with was Greg Rousseau. And he's somebody I've been frustrated with at times. I was okay with the pick out of Miami. He sat for a year due to COVID, and I think it was a lot to do with like personal life with his mom because I think she worked in healthcare and stuff like that. But he had a 15-sack season at Miami. But a lot of them were covered sacks. However, he's coming to the league, and he's been a very good player. And I will say, in 2024, and this is per Football Reference, last year he was top 20 in quarterback hurries, top 10 in QB knockdowns, top 15 in quarterback pressures, and top 30 in sacks. And that's effectively you not getting much help from the interior. And you kind of being the only consistent element there. Von Miller was not consistent. AJ Epinesa was not consistent. I've mentioned the interior. Ed Oliver definitely was not consistent last year. And now this year, you go into this season.
Right.
You've added a ton onto that defensive line. Not only just through draft picks, three of which, by the way, at the high end, first to fourth round with Deion Walker, Landon Jackson, and TJ Sanders. You have added a ton there. Then you also go to free agency with Hoyt and Ogunjobi, who will be coming in week 16. Bosa, who's already here. Week six. Did I say week 16?
Yes, you did.
Week six. And then you have Bosa, who we'll see where his health is.
Six in the name.
But I think ultimately the additions you made through the draft could really help you. And then, as I mentioned, the improved secondary. If he's already at these numbers without much help, to the point where most people acknowledge, outside of needing like that one kind of option that in the playoffs you just know they're going to make you a play, if you ask a lot of people, their biggest issue has actually been pass rush. If he's putting up these numbers now at 24 years old, what's he going to be if Landon Jackson and TJ Sanders hit right away? And I'm not saying be Pro Bowl or all-pro players, just be really darn good players right away. He had 8 sacks last year. Does that jump up to 11.5, 12 in terms of QB pressures? He's already top 15.
It could also spread out amongst the team.
It totally could. It totally could.
So he might stick around 8, 9.
He might, but also.
But if I get a boost from other players throughout the roster, that is more of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would think that Rousseau is probably less likely. Matter of fact, my player might have an outside chance of being in the top 10 of his position right now. Terrell Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
Terrell Bernard has become a linchpin within the Bills defense, and especially within the injuries that have happened to Matt Milano, has taken over as the de facto leader on the second level. He played well when Dorian Williams was in. He played well when Milano was trying to work himself back in the lineup. And he was rewarded as such. I wouldn't be surprised if Terrell Bernard holds on to a distinction this year, let alone staying like that and being named on another top 10 list next year at linebacker.
Yeah.
Mostly because it is very hard to see consistency within the linebacker position year in and year out in the NFL. I do think there's a lot of volatility there. The one downside is, they've kind of bunched all of them now. Like, if you're a Will linebacker, if you're the Mike, it does seem like it's pretty much we're grouping all linebackers together.
Mm-hmm.
But Bernard has shown he can play on either side of it. Especially now when offenses are running primarily nickel as a base defense in this day and age. But I wouldn't be surprised if Bernard has gotten some recognition at this point. That said, it's a lot easier to recognize a running back who had 16 touchdowns than it is to recognize a linebacker in league circles.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll see what the rest of the list looks like. But
Bernard is somebody.
My prediction is that Bernard might even be on here this year.
He could be. Bernard, I think, has a real good shot at it. He gets turnovers. That's been true since day one.
He's made flashy plays the minute he stepped into that lineup. We were all kind of like, okay, what's the impact going to be of Tremaine Edmonds leaving for Chicago? Well, the answer was not at all.
Yeah. I think he's a really good shout. We'll get some of your thoughts on Twitter and also, again, of course, taking your calls on who do you think by this time next year could break into ESPN's top 10 list on the Buffalo Bills. We've heard Greg Rousseau. We've heard Terrell Bernard. Love to hear your thoughts. We've got a few of them already on Twitter. We'll read that again after a quick timeout. You're listening to Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shopping online at northtownkia.com. Asking the question today, with ESPN's top 10 list coming out today, starting with running backs, James Cook made the list. Number 8 overall for running backs last year, not ranked. He falls just behind guys like Jonathan Taylor, who came in seventh. And so we asked the question, who do you think by this time next year on the Bills could find themselves on that list? I've mentioned Greg Rousseau. Derek, you've mentioned Terrell Bernard.
With the outside chance that he might be there this year.
This year. And on that point, Todd brings up Christian Benford, who is somebody I've mentioned I actually think would be a really good shout. The only problem is for me there, is I do think he'll be on the list. I think it might be towards the bottom. I would not be surprised or even upset if he's 10th. I would love for him to get any of that recognition at all. But I do think with the improved defensive line, I do think it's improved. I think there's an improved secondary with Harrison, Doran Strong, even Trey White coming in. I think they're going to be better than where they were last year, especially towards the end of the year. I think there is a really good chance Benford becomes, quote-unquote, a named player, a known guy across the league, especially with all the primetime games the Bills play, a timely interception or two here or there during primetime games. I think very quickly he could become that guy of like, yep, he's one of the top 10 corners in football. I think Todd's absolutely right on that. And then Joshua had an interesting one that I just can't get around. Ray Davis.
Which Ray Davis, I know you want to be hopeful that the heir apparent or the player that was drafted could be able to immediately step in there. I think that Ray Davis's presence will also threaten for James Cook to also not be a top 10 running back per ESPN next year.
If you believe Ray Davis is that good.
If he ends up playing that well.
Yeah.
It's almost like this accidental, like, oopsies sort of thing.
Yeah.
To where you take each other out. Kind of like, hey, remember that MVP discussion last year? And the Ravens had two of them. And you could say, if you have two MVPs, you have no MVPs.
Because statistically, that is true. I mean,
if you have two top, in this day and age, if you have two top 10 running backs, you have zero top 10 running backs because there's only one football, and the Bills also employ Josh Allen at quarterback.
Yeah.
If they didn't, say this is a Tyrod Taylor-led offense, yes, I'd be willing to listen. Because then you're probably running the football enough to where that's a realistic possibility.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's not enough of a football when Josh Allen is your quarterback. Because, ready? If Ray Davis ends up as a top 10 running back, there's one of two ways that happens. God forbid anything that's an injury, so I'm going to knock on wood to stop that. But the other is you're running the football way too much for a team that has Josh Allen, and we all will not be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two scenarios within the realistic lines of logic. And I know you're not calling your shot that James Cook's going to get hurt. And anything potential on, like, what if he holds in? Too many running backs have looked at the Le'Veon Bell situation and learned a tough lesson. That lesson is, we're not taking this from a running back. It's a different day and age. You are replaceable. There's no way that James Cook goes ahead and sits out an entire year.
Especially when, in the final year of his deal, he's making the most money he has in his entire career. He hasn't made that much.
Right.
To account for all the if we're really sitting here in the Le'Veon Bell situation, he literally hasn't gotten enough money for it to be any sort of a financially sound strategy for him to go, I'll sit out the whole year and make it back. He's making $5.2 million this year.
The highest amount
he made before that was last year at $1.1.
Who also then said when he returned for minicamp, I like my money.
Yeah, he's telling you, he's going to play it out. And if he's not a Bill at the end of free agency next year, okay.
I think the thing we can all say is I'm going to miss James Cook, but I'm going to savor it while he's still here because he is a good talent.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also good enough that he is the big play element of the running back trio.
Yeah, absolutely. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.